interesting stuff. So presenting this morning is Arnav, who is a security engineer at Security Research Labs in Berlin. And he does a lot of fuzzy stuff. And in his free time, he organizes DIY shows and makes music and other things. And now he will tell us about Autarkey, an instant grammar fuzzing using Rust macros. And I'm interested to see what you do.
Arnav. Thanks. All right, thanks for coming, everybody, 10 a.m. on a Monday. I'm pretty excited to present Autarkey, which is a fuzzer I've been working on over the past few months after my bachelor's thesis. So this was the topic for my bachelor thesis. For those of you who don't know what fuzzing is a way to automatically test programs and explore novel program behavior. So suppose we want to test SQLite. You would create like a list of valid SQL statements or invalid SQL statements, and then you would give it to the target and say, this is what's supposed to happen, this is what's not supposed to happen. So you kind of like model happy paths and unhappy paths. But this is quite restrictive, right? It does not cover like a large number of ways a user may interact with your system. And this is where fuzzing comes in, and it's very effective at that. So you would give a fuzzer a set of valid test cases, which it would take, mutate, and then run, or like execute the target. And then it would see if the mutated input gave new coverage. And you can think of coverage as code coverage, but it's a bit more granular than that. And if it does find new coverage, it would then add it back to the queue and continuously mutate like in a loop. Fuzzing is very effective. It's very scalable. Like, you can scale it across CPU cores. You can scale it across machines. And it has been really, really effective at finding bugs. Google's large-scale fuzzing campaign called OSS Fuzz has found over 40,000 bugs in various popular open-source projects. And many of them are security vulnerabilities. And this was like a fuzzer's claim to fame, so to say. When AFL came out, people were finding like crazy memory corruption vulnerabilities, and then everybody was suddenly into fuzzing because this was like the best way to find these bugs. So now with more memory-safe languages, we're not just looking for memory corruption, we're looking for null pointer dereferences, we're looking for like undefined behaviors. So integer under and overflows, or just simple invariants. For example, an invariant for an SQL database may be that, hey, a user who does not have permission to alter a table must never be able to alter that table under any circumstance. So because of this recursive loop, of the fuzzer is really, really good at finding these edge cases. And it's composed of four parts. There's the corpus, so the collection of test cases. A mutator, which takes these test cases, mutates them, and then gives them to the executor, which runs the target and collects behavior. So it may look for crashes or new coverage. And then we evaluate if this test case, which was mutated, was actually interesting. And if so, then we put it back to the corpus. So in my opinion, mutation is probably the most important part of a fuzzer, because you want to explore more and more combinations, more and more different ways to interact with a system. And effective mutation strategies enable that. But the problem is that most fuzzers use byte-level mutations. So if you look at the byte-mutated SQL input, which may be generated by AFL++ or libfuzzer, like two very, very popular fuzzers, you know it's not going to get through the parser at all. Like, you have bit flips, byte swaps. Maybe you take a part from another input and you place it in this one. And this breaks the structure drastically. So for complex applications like network protocols, programming languages, and basically anything with a very strict input structure, or markup languages and so on, it's very difficult. Like, the fuzzing strategy, the byte level fuzzing strategy is really ineffective. So grammar mutations or grammar fuzzing was a proposed alternative. And grammar fuzzers work by performing semantic mutations that always retain structure. So Nautilus, like if you see on the graph, the chart on the left, Nautilus, which is a fuzzer created by students at Ruhr Universität in Bochum, drastically surpasses AFL, which is a very common baseline fuzzer, because they perform these grammar mutations. So once the structure remains intact and you are able to mutate effectively, you're more interested in the execution, right? Because like gone are the days where you'd find this crazy parser bug because of a wrong size or wrong offset, and then you'd be able to jump or do whatever you want. This is not really possible. So we want to find bugs in the execution, and grammar fuzzing really enables that effectively. But if it's so good, why haven't we heard about it, right? Why isn't everyone going crazy about grammar fuzzing? And this is not a new concept. It's been around for a while. And that's because they're actually very difficult to use, primarily because of manual grammar. So if I want to fuzz SQLite again, I would have to create, hundreds of SQL statements, model them, saying, this is what the structure of a create table statement looks like, this is what this looks like, and then I have to update it and I have to verify it. And this requires really expert domain knowledge. And for me, this is why I love fuzzing, because it was just super easy to set up, right? You would take an application, you'd make a simple test harness. The test harness is usually in the application, and you would just give it some test cases and it would just do its thing. But this is not really possible with grammar fuzzing. And another issue, which is a lack of modern features, fuzzing has benefited significantly from like a lot of academic research over the past decade, but grammar fuzzing unfortunately does not keep up with this, nor do they maintain it, unfortunately. Like most of them are deprecated, so if you try running a fuzzer now, good luck with that. And as someone who performs a lot of fuzzing campaigns at SR Labs, I really benefit from the diversity of fuzzers in a fuzzing campaign. You have AFL working with HongFuzz, maybe LibFuzzer, and you really see, because each fuzzer works differently, each fuzzer mutates differently, they should all be able to coordinate amongst themselves, and this is how you really perform an effective fuzzing campaign. But grammar fuzzers can't do this. They can't learn from other fuzzers, and nor can they do like long-term fuzzing, because sometimes you want to restart your fuzzer, sometimes you want to change your test harness, sometimes somebody wants your CPU cores, so you have to stop the fuzzer and start with less CPU cores. And grammar fuzzers can't restart. So these were all of the issues I encountered, and I was like, the goal was to build a solution to that. And this is why I built Autarky, to solve all of these challenges and really surpass Grammatron and Nautilus, which are both like state-of-the-art grammar fuzzers, by 4% on PHP and Ruby. And it's important to note that for all of these targets, the grammars for Nautilus and Grammatron, the two competing fuzzers, was written by expert researchers, and I just automatically inferred grammar, which was my primary motivation. I was like, can I actually just get the grammar? Because it's in the source code, and it turns out you can, and I will show you how. And I also built Autarky on libAFL. For those of you who don't know, libAFL is a really, I think it's like the coolest fuzzing library there is. There's nothing like this. You can swap targets, so you can run binary only, you can run QEMU, you can run Frida, you can swap mutators, you can swap input scheduling strategies. So it's a very modular framework to build fuzzers, and Autarky is built on this. And it also supports SERDE natively. So for those of you who don't know what SERDE is, it's a data serialization and deserialization framework in Rust. So think of taking an object or a type, putting it into bytes, and then loading it back again. You can store the bytes as anything. You can store it as JSON. You can store it as protobuf, bincode, borsch. There's many like encoding formats. And this is what really enables Autarky to shine in terms of cooperation and restarts. So let's start with the core problem, right? You need to define the input structure. So first you would like study simple SQL statement, and then you would create this really ugly looking grammar, which is a context-free grammar in Antler, and then you would run your fuzzer. Now, any mistake in this grammar, suppose I put the wrong, instead of identifier, I choose integer for row ID, this will break the grammar, right? Your fuzzer will not be able to solve this constraint. And this requires a lot of trial and error and a lot of really expert domain knowledge. And then this is where macros come in, because I was like, you have to parse the target anyways, right? Like if you want to run SQL statements, you need to parse SQL statements. So could I use this internal structure to generate the grammar or even generate a fuzzer, which is what Autarky does, and it turns out that I could. And we will get into the macro later on to see how it kind of works. And the best part is the macros are compiler enforced. So I actually know that I have covered every single statement and I have covered every single type with my macro, which is the serialize, deserialize, and the grammar macro right above statement. And for those of you who don't know what macros are, they're essentially code which generates code. So you can give it this statement enum and say, for every type in this enum, generate this code. So it's a very common pattern in Rust, especially for supporting like debug. So it automatically creates a debug implementation for your type and so on. And this makes it really, really easy to do a lot of things. So for those of you who don't know what runtime reflection is, interpreted languages typically support that. So during runtime, you can take an object and say, you can cast it to an arbitrary type. Sorry. And then say, OK, does this have any fields? Is it an object? Is it a list? Is it null? And so on. So Rust does not have this because it's compiled. I mean, Go is also compiled, but let's say Rust does not support this. So I had to basically create an interface which enables this sort of reflection, because the goal was to kind of have the fuzzer work on all types, right? You just give it a type and it's supposed to work. So at runtime, you need to know what type it is in order to mutate it. And think of this interface as a tree data structure. So I would have an input, let's say, which is a SQL statement, a create table statement, which has an ID, user ID, and an amount. It would become a tree where every node in this tree is implementing this interface. And like this, it just becomes a list of nodes. I can access any node at runtime because I have this interface and all types implement this interface. And this is where I think it really clicked for me, saying like, hey, I can do really advanced fuzzing strategies because of this simple interface. And another cool Rust feature that enables this is that each type has a unique type ID at runtime. And this means I can take any type in the tree of types, find out if it's, I don't know, a hash map, a list, a type of a create table statement or whatever, and then save it to disk. And then I can go there again and maybe replace that create table statement with an update table statement. And like this, I have the whole structure of nodes in a tree and their types. And this really enables like granular mutation strategies. For example, suppose you have a list of SQL statements, but only the first three statements give you coverage. Then you can just remove the last seven statements because you just don't need them. Or you can semantically mutate lists. You can semantically mutate recursive elements. So suppose you have a create table statement which has another statement or another statement recursively, you can just remove the recursion because all of this data is available to us at runtime because of the macro. And you can also generate nodes arbitrarily. You can compare nodes. And I think the comparison bit is probably like my favorite feature on top of the macro. So constraint solving has always been difficult for fuzzers. Like if there's a hard-coded integer or an integer that's coming from the database, the fuzzer will never be able to guess it, or it's very difficult to guess a U64, right? Like unsigned 64-bit integer. And this is where Complog comes in, which was implemented again by the same PhD students that implemented Nautilus. And it's a really cool technique, right? So before every integer and string comparison, it would insert a callback which would say, hey, this was the left and the right side of the comparison. And then it would store it in memory, which the fuzzer would then able to access. But the way normal fuzzers would do this is they would place this comparison, the left and the right value, randomly in the input and try to guess which part of the input triggered the comparison. But I don't need to do that because I have all the nodes. I know the type of each node. So I can say, hey, there was an U64 comparison. I will just pick node A because I know that's a U64 and that had the right value for the left-hand side of the comparison. So I will replace it with the right-hand side and see if I go further. And this has been really, really effective at solving constraints, like especially when fuzzing eBPF interpreters, which was surprisingly annoying to have to guess the opcode because I didn't want to have to write the opcode. And yeah, look into Complog. It's really cool. And if you're not using Complog in your fuzzing campaigns, please do so. And for the final bit, or like the final feature that I really, really like, is the native SERDE support. And this means you can store your input in any way. For now, I only support bin code, but you could potentially add protobuf. It's quite straightforward to implement it yourself. And so let's say like AFL would add an input to the shared corpus, and then I would be able to deserialize it into my internal representation. But since the fuzzer may generate a lot of invalid inputs, I will say, hey, this didn't work, but I can also give you my input. So you would serialize it back into bytes, which AFL can then learn from. So this really enables this collaborative effort that was lacking in grammar fuzzing. And this also enables fuzzer restarts, because I can store my state on disk. I can store any arbitrary type on disk. And all of this is because of SERDE. Very cool library, very well implemented. It has its own controversies. You can look into that. But it's probably like the best way to do this in Rust. So let's see a demo. We're going to be fuzzing SQLite. I hope this is readable. So I Googled SQL parser in Rust, and I found this library by Apache, which was pretty well written and pretty well maintained. And it had the two key elements I needed. It had the grammar, which we will see. It's just a statement enum, right? Because at the end of the day, we want a list of statements. And it looked to be pretty exhaustive. And it also allowed me to render this internal structure back into a string, which is quite important because we're fuzzing a C application, right? So we need bytes. We can't use the Rust data type to fuzz it. So I was, yeah, let's go through the type. It seems quite exhaustive. And now I need to check if it has SERDE support. So it's just grepping for that. And it turns out that, yeah, every type had SERDE, so it was quite, it was all just there for me. And this is why I say I bring like the simplicity back to grammar fuzzing, because it's right there. Now, all I really need to do is then add my own macro alongside serialize, which is just one statement. I can find all instances of serialize and then add my grammar macro, and I see that, okay, it looks pretty covered. It should compile fine. And you can then have to add my fuzzer as a dependency. And it's currently only available on Git. I can't really publish it on crates yet. And this is our like fuzzer. So we instrumented our source of grammar, and now we need to build a fuzzer, which is saying, hey, all I want is a list of statements. And this is how you render the statements to bytes, which is going through every statement and then formatting it to a string. And then you have a list of statements with a semicolon and a new line. And then I run the fuzzer only on one core with the output directory of out. OK, no, actually, I run it on 16 cores. And yeah, it runs. And let's see some example inputs in just a second. So you can also render the corpus. So I will store it in an internal format. Like the fuzzer stores it in an internal format, but you can also render it to like what the fuzzer, the test case, the target would actually get. And as you see, it's very like jumbled. It probably won't execute correctly, but there are ways to simplify this. But you know that the structure is intact. And you can also give it a set of strings. For example, if you have an existing table that you want to fuzz, you can just give it that table. Okay, but what if the grammar you want is not available, right? So this was done yesterday on a whim. I was like, can I vibe code a V8 fuzzer?
I'm about to ask about that.
Yes. So if the grammar is, and I encountered this a lot, right? Because what I show, it's usually not as easy as that. I tried fuzzing image formats and yeah, it was not that easy. So I was like, I can write the grammar myself, but that would kind of defeat the purpose of my fuzzer. But while experimenting with LLMs, I really realized that LLMs are much better at writing code than they are at creating this weird context-free grammar for Antler. And it's much easier to debug if it's Rust code. So this was quite funny. I just gave it a very simple prompt, like create a Rust crate that has Serde as a dependency, then create a data structure to parse JavaScript expressions and make sure each expression can be rendered as a string. Because again, we'll be fuzzing a C++ code base, so we want to be able to render it back into bytes. And then I say the goal is to use this data structure to generate random expressions. Do not implement the generation functionality, just the data structure. And you can use anything. I've used ChatGPT, I've used Claude, whatever. And this is all done live, which was really just done on a whim. And I was quite happy with the results. I don't know if you can see, but the token count is progressing, so something's happening.
I work for OpenAI. I'm doing this right now with ChatGPT-5, so let's see how that works.
Not as good as Claude. Okay, so our code is generated, and now I will just build the fuzzer. So you will see the end-to-end process of how I would like fuzz with my own implementation. So as you can see, it looks pretty exhaustive, right? It's got all sorts of expressions. It's got binary operators, unary operators, and it seems to be doing okay. Let's not question it. So now I need to add my grammar as a dependency and also build the final fuzz data struct, which is just one expression, because let's keep it simple, right? We just want to fuzz one expression. Eventually, you can add statements, so you can fuzz full programs, but for now, we just fuzz using an expression. So you would add the macros again. You would have like serialize, deserialize, the grammar macro, and then debug and clone just for better debugging usage. Can I fast forward this? Oh, okay. I'm not a Microsoft user, I'm just saying. Okay, and now we just simply replace serialize with the serialize and the grammar macro, and then we should be good. And I also asked the LLM to create a dictionary with all like built-in functions in JavaScript, because this will significantly simplify a fuzzing campaign, right? Because you don't just want to test the parser, you also want to test the standard library. So there's like a lot of date, float, arrays, buffer, uint, 8 arrays, and so on. And yeah, Rust compilation takes a bit, as we all know. And let's run it. with same, this time it's 64 cores. And it's using the latest V8 on that commit hash. And yeah, we've got almost 2 million edges. V8 is a beast. And again, let's look at some generator JavaScript by the fuzzer. So yeah, it's jumbled, but it's all valid JavaScript. It may have some invalid JavaScript because of like dot notation or so on, but yeah, that's it. That's basically a V8 grammar fuzzer in 6 minutes or so. So yeah, to conclude, Autarky is very easy to use. The usage of macros really makes it so much easier to debug, to generate, and most of the time you'll have your grammar right there for you. It's also very performant. Don't take my word for it, run the evaluations yourself. And also it's built with this flexibility in mind, so the repository will be at the, towards the end. I really encourage you to check it out, and I really highly encourage you to contribute. So if you want to try a different mutation strategy, saying, hey, I want to say, because you know the type of the node, maybe you want to say, if this is a list, maybe I want to remove every fifth element of a list. I don't know why, but maybe you want to do that. You can, because libAFL is really built with this modularity in mind. Autarky is also cooperative. I did not demo that, but you can just read the docs and you will see that it's capable of doing that. So yeah, how you can contribute. Feedback is very important. Please use it, because so far it's been out in the wild for a bit and I haven't received any bug reports, so I'm wondering if people are actually using it. So please use it. Find bugs, find some trophies, and I think for me also Autarky lays the foundation for academic research, because the baseline is all there, right? You've got a way to write the grammar, you've got a way to access the grammar during runtime, so all you need to do now is to build different scheduling strategies, different mutation strategies, maybe even custom constraint solving strategies, or maybe you just make it more performant, so this is all there as a foundation for further work. And you can also add support for Frida, QEMU, or WASM, so non-standard library environments, hypervisor fuzzing. All of this is there. So yeah, please have a look and please contribute. Thank you.
Thank you. We're actually much under time, so you were really quick. And so there's more time for questions.
Also happy to have a in-depth technical discussion after, if anybody feels like I'm around until lunch tomorrow.
Any immediate questions? Yes.
So I've seen you use Autark with Rust data structures, but you use serializer, deserializer, that use formats that can also work with external products, basically, that are also used in other languages. Could you use Autark to fuzz things or to generate fuzz patterns for things written in other languages?
Unfortunately not. This was something I was thinking about for long, because targeting LLVM would have been great to infer grammar from LLVM data structures, but it was just too much work. And at work, we're fuzzing Rust primarily, like a lot of blockchain stuff. So I wanted to focus on Rust because of this macro also, which was a very valuable language construct that enabled this. But I'm also willing to bet that more often than not, the grammar is written already in Rust. Like, it was crazy. I was fuzzing a lot of image formats, so I found AVIF, PNG, libjpg, like the parsers are all there. So unfortunately, it's not possible, but maybe you find the parser already implemented in Rust by someone. So yeah. Otherwise, if you have a way you imagine it could be done, please let me know. I would be very open to that, and it would be really cool to add more support for more languages.
Okay, more questions. Yeah.
Please use a mic so other people can repeat the question.
Okay. Thank you very much. You mentioned that you were fuzzing Rust. So the biggest question I have about that is, how do you actually find when an error or a crash has occurred? Do you have to instrument the binaries to crash in certain conditions? Or do you have a way of searching for certain behavior?
So Rust supports like debug assertions which have like undefined behavior, so int under overflows. You can add address sanitizer for memory unsafe stuff. And usually we do a lot of invariant fuzzing, so we define the invariants ourselves, and a panic is reported as an abort. So you kind of know when it crashes. What else? Yeah, I think undefined behavior is there, address sanitizer is there, and the panics are there. So that's kind of our strategy, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. More questions?
Thank you for the presentation. I saw you added the macro to have runtime inspection of, or actually compiled inspection of types. Have you looked at the facet macro by Fawcett and Lime?
Sorry, what macro?
There's a library called facet.
Okay.
And it is supposed to do give you runtime information about types. For all purposes, it should also work for this.
Okay, but does it use din any? Like, is it using the any type or?
No, I don't think so. But yeah, we can talk about it later.
Or we can talk about it now. Wait. Wait. How do I? Okay. So what's it called?
F-A-C-A-T. E-T, yeah. It's just a macro that creates some data structures with all the information about the type. And
very
you can use that.
Thanks. I'll have to have a look. Because I really don't want to maintain my macro, so if someone else is doing it for me, I'm very happy. Thanks.
More questions?
All right, yeah, thanks a lot. Again, feel free to approach me, talk about fuzzing, talk about also something other than fuzzing, because I talk a lot about fuzzing. Thanks.
So, thanks, Arnav.